Well, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate that. Stand by for Mark Belanger and Radio Labor.
Hello, I'm Mark Belanger from Radio Labor, reporting for the Union Edge.
Today is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. Labor organizations around the world are using the day to build greater awareness about violence against women in the workplace and what can be done about it. Rosa Pavanelli, the General Secretary of Public Services International, the PSI, told the media, "Violence against women at work is not merely the problem of the women who suffer, but of all of us. Violence against women is violence against society as a whole." Fred Van Leeuwen, the General Secretary of Education International, said, "Gender-based violence is a fundamental violation of human rights. It's one of the worst manifestations of gender-based discrimination and a major obstacle to achieving gender equality." Veronica Fernandez-Mendez is the head of the Equal Opportunities Department of UNI, the Global Union Federation for Skills and Services.
Violence is a breach of women's human rights. We are talking about sexual assault, physical abuse, and verbal degradation. It is a global issue deeply rooted in the relation of power and inequality between women and men. We should keep it at the top of our agenda. We need to put all the resources needed to end this violence. What we notice is that violence against women, whether sexual, physical, mental, psychological, or economic, is a widespread phenomenon that affects millions of women. The lack of proper labor legislation exacerbates the vulnerability of women that are already at the margins of society.
The International Labor Organization, the ILO, is trying to get its member states to adopt a new convention about violence against women at work. A convention is a law which, if adopted, becomes part of a country's legislative infrastructure. Jane Hodges is with the ILO's Gender Bureau.
The International Labour Organization is very interested to see our membership, representatives of governments, labour and business, looking to a possible International Labour Convention and recommendation on violence against women and men at work. We're hearing from our membership, 185 member states across all regions, that violence at work is on the rise. It's not just sexual harassment or daily inconveniences. It's becoming a very, very serious occupational safety and health issue. It's costing employers bucks because there's not only absenteeism and sickness claims, broken ribs, the bashed eye, but machinery also in a factory setting or on plantations is being destroyed. We're seeing also an incredible cost in stress, work-related stress, and eventually, in fact, we're seeing legal costs and so forth down the road. So employers and workers have a reason to have a new International Labour Convention.
The International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women has been declared by the United Nations. The UN is encouraging people to recognize the day by displaying the color orange in their communities. Daniel Dickinson of UN Radio reports,
"People around the world are being encouraged to display the colour orange in their communities to symbolise hope for a future free from violence against women and girls. The Orange Your Neighbourhood initiative is being launched by the UN to coincide with the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, which is marked annually on the 25th of November. Reet Gronen is from UN Women, the UN's gender-focused agency.
Violence against women is a very serious problem. It's a serious human rights violation. It's happening in every country in the world. It doesn't make a difference whether you're rich or poor, whether you're educated or not. It's really an experience which many, many women and girls unfortunately experience.
Violent acts against women are in most cases committed by an intimate partner. Of all women killed in 2012, almost half died at the hands of a partner or family member. The He for She campaign, launched earlier this year by UN Women, seeks to reverse that trend. Its aim is to engage men and boys as advocates of change for the achievement of gender equality and women's rights. The International Day kicks off 16 days of action against gender violence, which culminates on Human Rights Day on December the 10th.
And that's it. I'm C. Marie Ainsborough. Thank you for listening.
If you work for a living, listen to The Union Edge. We talk about your issues and find solutions to your problems.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate that. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in The Union Edge. And right now, folks, we're talking with Jen Judson, who is with Politico. Michelle Flournoy tops the short list to replace Chuck Hagel for Secretary of Defense. Jen, welcome to Union Edge.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I have to be honest with you. I don't know a lot about Michelle Flournoy. You know, the Department of Defense, you know, I'm a veteran, and, you know, I try and stay up on top of some of the things that are going on, even though it's been a long time since I actually served. Don't know a lot about her. Tell us a little bit about her and why she be considered for the top job within the Defense Department.
Sure. Michelle Flournoy is actually the former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. She served in that role from 2009 to 2012. She actually left that position to rebalance her life. She has three children, and you know, while her husband Scott has always been very supportive and will likely be supportive if she is selected, she felt the need to pay a little bit more attention to her family. And currently she is the CEO. She's also the co-founder of the Center for New American Security, and that's a nonpartisan think tank. And she's very well respected in Washington. She's well respected in the Pentagon. So she is considered to be a good candidate for this job. And she was also considered a top contender for the job, along with Secretary Hagel. When he was confirmed, she was on the short list as well then. And she's also considered to be on Hillary Clinton's list if she were to be elected in 2016. So she's had her name out there at the top of the list for a while.
Let me ask you one thing. You know, some of the research I was doing on this earlier, I heard she was described to be a little bit hawkish. Are we talking Maggie Iron Pants Thatcher hawkish, where we're going to send the Royal British Navy into the Falklands with no ands, ifs, or buts about it? Or are we talking about an affirmative defense across the United States?
I would say a little bit more balanced than that. She is considered hawkish on defense issues. You know, I believe that she has expressed I believe that troops in Afghanistan staying longer is something that she has advocated for. And she's also pushed for better defined goals in the fight against ISIL, you know, something that Hagel was also pushing for. You know, whether she's able to be more effective in conveying what the Defense Department needs in the future, she may be able to have a stronger voice. She's also very, very vocal on overturning sequestration in fiscal 2016. So I know that she'll be hawkish over, you know, making sure that the Defense Department has the money it needs to do what it needs to do abroad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Imagine that. That's that not for nothing. That's a good thing. You know, and if we can't protect our interests and we can't protect our borders, you know, we're not talking about kids coming across the southern border and running into the arms, the waiting arms of the United States Border Patrol. God bless each and every one of them. But, you know, so this is maybe a little bit of a breath of fresh air. Specifically, she's talking about ISIL. What are her thoughts on ISIL?
Well, I think that we may see a little bit more of a push from her to, you know, keep under consideration. I mean, not necessarily advocating for combat troops on the ground, but making sure that continues to be a consideration. You know, I think that she would be for it if it appeared that we would need to send combat troops in. You know, one interesting aspect is, you know, what her nomination could say is that, you know, Hagel wasn't ousted over opinions about possibly sending combat troops into Iraq, as Flournoy, you know, has supposedly said, according to Panetta in his book, that's the former Secretary of Defense, that she believed residual forces should have stayed in Iraq. So her nomination would show the resignation, you know, wasn't about that type of disagreement necessarily.
I tend to think that that's very true for a number of different reasons. You know, let me ask you a question. Has she come out and said anything specifically about drones and continued airstrikes against ISIL? You know, I'm an ex-Air Force guy, an ex-forward air controller. You know, airstrikes, I get it. It worked in 91. It can work today if it's done properly. And it doesn't necessarily, with today's technology, mean a whole heck of a lot more extra troops on the ground. You know, not for nothing, eyes on target or eyes on target, and it doesn't really matter how you get those eyes on the target.
You know, I'm not sure if I've heard her say anything very specifically about whether she believes airstrikes are good or effective or not as effective as other methods. But so that's definitely something to watch to see what her rhetoric may be on that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of people, they've been talking about, oh, we have to have boots on the ground. So, yeah, if you're going to seize and hold ground, that's what you need boots on the ground for. But if you just want to obliterate targets, have air will travel.
Sure.
You know, an F-16.
Sure, I think with the combat troops on the ground, most believe that it would just be, you know, small groups maybe that help Iraqi soldiers on the front lines and not really, you know, a huge brigade type scenario, you know, sending in a lot of combat troops. It would be a more agile grouping.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, quite honestly, you can teach people how to do an airstrike pretty quick. So long and short of this is going to be very interesting indeed. Yeah, and I've got a lot of forward air control friends that are really mad at me right now, but it's, you know, putting a pilot's eyes on the target is, well, once you can get past that they are a pilot, that's one thing, but we can go on from there. Anything else? Yeah. Anything else that we should know about Ms. Forney?
Well, I think, you know, one thing about this is that her confirmation will likely be less difficult than, say, Secretary Hagel's confirmation. You know, she is well-respected, and I believe that, you know, Senator John McCain, who is expected to take over as the Senate Armed Services Chairman, you know, although he is pretty tough, would likely see her confirmation through.
Speaking of my favorite Navy pilot, yes. if she was good enough for Bush, perhaps she's good enough for Obama?
Yeah, and, you know, she does a good job being, you know, relatively nonpartisan. So, you know, she obviously leads a nonpartisan think tank. And so she's done a good job, you know, garnering respect from both parties.
And right now we're talking with Jen Judson of Politico. Jen, please be very careful. All of a sudden we're talking about bipartisan cooperation on Capitol Hill with the House and the Senate. My God, dogs and cats are going to be living together next. You know what I mean?
Right, right. One can always hope for smoother waters, but I'm not sure we'll see that anytime soon.
You know, it used to be that the dogfight stopped at the water's edge. I'm not sure that that's happening anymore. Perhaps our friends in Washington can get back to that. Jen, how do we find out more about you and what you write for Politico?
Well, you can follow me at Politico Pro. It's a special defense page on Politico. I mainly track congressional issues having to do with defense, but I also report on programmatic issues. I actually spent the last 3 years covering Army aviation and missile defense, so that is my area of expertise mostly. But if you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is Jen Judson.
And if you include us at The Union Edge, we will retweet that for you. But in the meantime, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And you
absolutely.
Know,
absolutely. Thank you.
And I hope sometime I can get your comments on the Comanche. But that's another story.
Absolutely. I know a lot about that.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
Everyone from the Obama family in the White House to my little family in Texas will take a deserved pause from the unrelenting intensity of work on Thanksgiving Day. But millions will not get a work pause. Such workers as firefighters, police, and hospital workers must stay on the job, but they're providing essential services for our society. Yet Walmart, Target, Macy's, Radio Shack, and other retailers are also requiring their low-paid workers to report. Why? What's essential about buying gewgaws, gizmos, or garments from these mass marketers of consumer excess that justifies them forcing employees to give up this family day of Thanksgiving? Retail giants already exploit the day after Thanksgiving, which they've dubbed Black Friday, for an orgy of commercialism. Yet that's not enough to satisfy soulless profiteers, so they've moved their Black Friday start back into Thursday, during the family mealtime of Thanksgiving Day itself. Some are even opening their doors at 6 a.m. on Thursday, essentially wiping out this day of family grace for every employee they require to be at work. A mall outside of Buffalo has gone even more extreme, requiring its 200-plus stores to open on Thanksgiving Day or pay a $200 an hour fine. This is what Pope Francis recently condemned as unbridled consumerism. Yet a Walmart PR flack claims to be doing consumers a favor by staying open on a spiritual day to, quote, provide what consumers need. This is Jim Hightower saying, bovine excrement. Walmart has nothing that needs to be bought on a holiday, and any of the stuff it sells can be bought the very next day from Costco, Crate and Barrel, Barnes & Noble, Dillard's, Nordstrom's, Patagonia, and other stores that respect their employees and America's values by closing on Thanksgiving Day.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager, too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created aarp.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate that. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. Also, folks, take the opportunity to go to our website, theunionedge.com. Sign up for our e-activist newsletter. If you're local, your organization needs some help, we'll get the word out for you. If you're willing to help, we'll get the word to you. It's called Solidarity. We're all in this together, and we're all working to improve our communities, that's for sure. Right now, on the line, we've got Jeremy Holden from Media Matters. Jeremy, welcome back to Union Edge.
Hey, Charles. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Hey, you just recently had an interesting discussion with Chris Hayes talking about what's the potential of conservative media really having an impact on the future of the Republican Party.
That's right, and we know that the conservative media has had an outsized influence on the Republican Party in the past. They've bragged about this. They've bragged about their ability to reach John Boehner and kind of, get their way. and certainly have bragged about their influence in Republican primaries, and I think that's a very important
right.
point here. And so we hear, coming out of the midterm elections, heading into a lame duck Congress, calls from the likes of Rush Limbaugh, Eric Erickson, calling for a government shutdown, Rush Limbaugh bragging that Fox News has made it normal, made it okay to just talk openly about impeachment. So that then becomes the question going forward. Is John Boehner, are leaders in the Republican Party going to kowtow to the Rush Limbaugh caucus the way we know they have in the past?
All I got to say is, you know, I have heard Laura Ingraham bragging that she's influenced elections when I don't believe it. Rush Limbaugh's losing audience. He's hemorrhaging audience. People are getting tired of the rhetoric and the silliness. They're moving on. They're going to anything but. And the interesting thing is we're seeing people like Governor Huckabee giving 300 radio stations, and that's not good enough. He wants more radio stations, but doesn't want to do what he has to do to make the program effective. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to run for president. Jeremy, I'm just not seeing it. I believe truly that right-wing shock jocks, be it on TV or radio, they're losing their influence.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that, particularly you talk about the market share, I don't think there's any question that they're losing their influence. But I think where they can remain influential is over elites and over highly motivated individuals. You know, we saw the third ranking member of the Republican House caucus get voted out in a primary, somebody who had large backing and a lot of support in conservative radio. Eric Erickson has bragged that, you know, they only need to get one or two people into the Senate in order to completely obstruct anything, right? I mean, it just takes Ted Cruz to shut down the government. So I think you're right that the trajectory is a waning influence for the conservative movement, but we've seen some evidence that they still are able to have enough support to be a cog in the system.
Specifically at whipping people up for primaries, do you think?
I think whipping people up for primary and having the threat that they will be able to do so, right? There's this speculation in the D.C. press that John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, actually does want to get comprehensive immigration reform signed. And that would make sense, right? I mean, Republicans have said that this is bad politics for them. Hispanic voters are a growing segment of the population. So this is bad politics. Republicans know that, but they won't bring a bill up for a vote. And I think what the belief is that John Boehner is worried that if he brings this up for a vote, if he allows mainstream Republicans to join Democrats and pass a bipartisan bill that's already gone through the Senate, then he will lose his speakership, because there are just enough people that are part of that Laura Ingraham caucus that they could mount an insurrection and replace Speaker Boehner with somebody else. So I think that is where you start to see a declining influence, but still enough influence to muck things up.
Right now we're talking with Jeremy Holden of Media Matters. Jeremy, let me ask you a question. Just, you know, for instance, Laura Ingraham, can you ballpark it for me approximately how large her audience is nationally? You know?
I don't have those numbers offhand. What's really interesting about Laura Ingraham, actually, is that she is an ABC News contributor. Right, so she has the stamp of approval of ABC News. She'll show up on those Sunday shows, and she's able to leverage that kind of credibility that she gets into some of the hateful things that we hear. And so, you know, the audience that she has on the radio is certainly smaller than what she gets at ABC News, but also a Fox News contributor. And so we start to see the way that some of these voices on the right infiltrate different media outlets, and they can change their tone depending on who they're talking to. But, you know, the end result is that they are able to leverage their radio audience, create enough of a following, and use that in order to try and push elites into, you know, either away from mainstream positions or toward fringe extreme positions.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And I will tell you that that doesn't happen just at the national level. I mean, here in one of our markets, we've got a talk show host that is also a news reporter who plays up on that pretty well. And so he tries to make you think that you're listening to the news when you're listening to his talk show. That's another story. In any case, Jeremy, anything else we should be looking at with this?
Well, I think we need to be looking at what the House does next. You know, we saw Fox News pushing this economist who ran some economic models on the Affordable Care Act, Jonathan Gruber, right? Mm-hmm. Fox grabbed a hold of this interview, ran it on a loop, something like 780 mentions over the course of a couple days to try and scandalize, again, the process by which the Obamacare was passed into law. What happens next? Daryl Issa subpoenas this economist to come testify before his committee, Daryl Issa, the head of the House Oversight Committee. So now we have this low-level technocrat who was a side advisor, an economic advisor in the early days drafting the Affordable Care Act. He says some boneheaded things at an academic conference, and now suddenly he's going to testify before Republicans on Capitol Hill about whether the Affordable Care Act is working. We actually already know that. We have the economic numbers about bending the cost curve, about the number of people who like the insurance that they've bought on the exchanges. But instead, we can try to scandalize this because Fox News runs it on a loop. It becomes a news story. And now this person goes before the Hill. So those types of relationships, I think, are what we need to look for going forward.
You know, it's amazing. If somebody says the Affordable Care Act isn't running, they'll run with that. But if a Republican in a Republican committee says there wasn't any truth to Benghazi, oh, we can't believe that. It's deeply flawed. You know, I think
that's a great example. And, you know, we see now John Boehner, his own caucus, Republicans on the Hill, saying that, you know, there's nothing here. This wasn't a scandal. This was just a tragedy, something most of us have known for years now. What does John Boehner do? He throws his own Republican committee under the bus and says, no, we need the other committee to look into this, right? We need the Tea Party-backed committee to continue looking into Benghazi. So you see how the fringe continues to maintain, be an anchor on Republicans. And unfortunately, on moving forward on so many policy issues.
And it's amazing to me how many times they can waste taxpayer dollars on their own interest, but scream bloody murder. God forbid a civil servant has two ballpoint pens. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Jeremy, how do we find out more about you and what you do for Media Matters?
We're over at MediaMatters.org. You can see all of our writing there. I also host the Media Matters radio show on Sirius, so you can check us out either of those places.
And we look forward to talking to you again here very soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises.
For Workers Independent News, I'm Joanne Powers. Hundreds of thousands of healthcare workers in England and Northern Ireland held a 4-hour strike Monday, protesting government refusal to pay a 1% wage increase. The workers have had no pay increase for the last 4 years. Dave Prentice is the General Secretary of Unison, one of the largest of the 11 unions involved in the dispute.
Health workers have been told they do not deserve a 1% increase. This is absolutely crass, it's wrong, and it's meant that our workforces are demoralised. They've been kicked in the teeth by a government that won't even give them a 1% increase, which is in line with the government's own pay policy. It's immoral, it's wrong, and we're standing up for our members.
This is the second strike by NHS workers over the pay dispute, and more actions are planned throughout the upcoming week. UK Trades Union Conference General Secretary Frances O'Grady participated in Monday's actions in support of the health workers.
I think people are really worried that at the root of this, we've got a government that wants to privatise our NHS, wants to ensure that the workers have their morale destroyed, are paid less and less, walk away from the NHS, and we're saying no, enough is enough. People have to live, they have to pay their bills, they've got children to bring up. A 1% increase is in fact a real pay cut, but the government wants workers to put up with an even worse real pay cut, and it's not on.
On Thursday and Friday, Los Angeles and Long Beach port truck drivers, supported by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, ended 8 days of strikes against 5 employers who have now agreed to meet with union officials. The primary concern of the drivers is their misclassification by employers as independent contractors. International Vice President Fred Potter serves as director of the Teamsters Ports Division.
Most of them, they lease a truck from the employer. They have no independency at all. They can't drive that truck for any other customer. All their terms, conditions of employment, what they get paid, they have no say in. The hours to work, the loads they pull, they pay all the cost of operating the business, all the fuel, all the repairs to the truck. The fact of the matter is we have a number of these drivers who work to 50, 60 or more hour a week and ended up with a negative paycheck.
At the request of Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, the workers and the companies returned to the table for discussions the Teamsters Justice for Port Truck Drivers campaign characterized as productive. Potter says that as long as their meetings remain productive, the drivers will continue to work.
If those talks break down, we're going to use whatever lawful economic means we can use, including the right to go on strike. I don't like using the word never. It's all about negotiations. And where people are misclassified, we don't feel we have any latitude.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by the American Federation of Teachers and its 1.6 million members working to reclaim the promise of public education, health care, and public services for our students, their families, and our communities. More information online at aft.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.